This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome to episode 132 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, December 20th, 2013. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by the lovely co-host, Sarah Gooding from Tulsa, Oklahoma. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing, I'm doing pretty good right now, but, you know, just before the show, we've had some technical difficulties. I was ready to explode in anger, but I don't want to do that. We have a cool, mellow guest on our show today. I can't wait to learn more about him. His name is Chris Lima, and just to give you a little insight into who he is, he helped start three software companies, sold two of them, and joined two others to help accelerate their product development. He's worn the engineer, analyst, designer, product manager, architect, and product marketer hats in different companies. Not sure if it was all at the same time. That's a lot of hats. And Chris Lima helps companies leverage WordPress and WordPress companies find leverage. Chris, thank you very much for taking some time out and being part of the show today.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Did you wear all those hats at one time or just
No. Several different companies, several different roles. Although in startups, you do end up wearing at least one or two hats. Or maybe two or three. It's hard to get away with, especially in that early incubation period, to get away with just saying I do one and only one thing, and everybody else walk away. Let me do my one thing. So you'd often wear at least two hats.
Right. So we're going to do something a little different here. This worked with Tom. We're going to try it with Chris here. He's our next guinea pig in line. And we're going to cover some of the headlines this week, and the first thing we want to talk about is if you haven't seen it, if you haven't read about it, you should go take a look at wptamarin.com. If you haven't been there in a long time, we just recently launched a new design for the website. Sarah, tell us a little bit about what is powering wptamarin.com now and kind of an insight into what we did.
Jeff and I worked together to create this child theme for the Stargazer parent theme. Justin Tadlock put that out maybe a month ago, I think. And we started playing around with it and thought it might be a good fit for the tavern. So we put together a theme that we thought would modernize our website and take it into the future. And we're pretty pleased with it, I'd say.
Spent a long time, number of hours sitting in a computer chair trying to get it right. And what you'll see is the version one of the new redesign. Based on all the comments we've seen, a lot of people like the new logo. They like the clean, simple look, the better typography. And thanks to keeping the sort of wooden floor concept on the background, we've been able to kind of keep that tavern personality but kind of give everything else a nice refresh. So I guess we sort of remodeled the tavern to make it more modern, but we still have that kind of tavern look, feel, and vibe. That if you haven't taken a look at it, you should point your browser to wptavern.com. It's also responsive, too, so you can take us anywhere you go. So we should look good on any mobile device. Next thing we want to tell you is that BuddyPress 1.9 Sammy was released. This includes a new notifications component. This is something we've been covering here for a little while. And I also like how BuddyPress major version releases include the names of pizza shops. So there's like a pizza shop named Sammy. It says Sammy's House of Pizza with free deliveries. Sarah, tell us a little bit about what's in BuddyPress 1.9.
Yeah, apparently all the lead devs are really into pizza, and that kind of powers their workflow. So they always name their releases after pizza. It's pretty cute. The new BuddyPress 1.9 has a new notifications component that's pretty exciting. It puts notifications on their own page where developers can hook into that and put their own notifications in there and have it arranged all there in one centralized place instead of spread out like it was before. This release also has dynamic menu items, which is really cool. If you go to your edit menu screen, you'll see a bunch of links related to BuddyPress in there. And the ones that you can see are the ones based on which components you have active. So if you have friends active on your site, you'll see links related to that. And you can just pop that into your menu in a really easy way. This helps people because in the past, we'd have to code these menus from scratch or, you know, install a plugin to get this to happen. But now it's built into the core, so it's really exciting. There are a few new widgets that you can check out. If you read the article, you can get a full tour of BuddyPress 1.9.
And also, to go on top of all of that, the BuddyPress Codex recently was revamped, completely revamped. So now it's easier to browse. They're looking for more contributors to contribute articles to it. In fact, you contributed an article to the Codex.
Yeah, I just put one kind of small one in there. But there are some people who have been writing absolute novels. They've done like, you know, 5 or 10 articles, and it's, you know, it's really expanded quite a bit. So if you have some time during the holidays and you want to build something with BuddyPress, the Codex is now a really great resource for that.
You mentioned here at the end of the post that the BuddyPress development team will be sending out a questionnaire.
Yep, they're going to see what should be added into 2.0. It's kind of psychologically, people are going to think of that as a bigger release, so they're going to get some community input to prioritize the features that they work on for 2.0.
Yeah, so if you're very in tune with what's going on with BuddyPress, definitely keep an eye out for that questionnaire. Chris, I know you've done a lot of work with WordPress and organizations. Have you had a chance to get your hands dirty with BuddyPress?
I played with earlier versions of BuddyPress and haven't yet circled back to the last two releases, so I'm sure it'll be exciting. We have a potential opportunity to look at that in the new year, so I look forward to checking it out.
Awesome. So if you're into GitHub, and I know a lot of WordPress developers are starting to go the way of GitHub now in terms of development, you can now contribute to Jetpack. Sarah, you published a news post earlier this week announcing that Jetpack is now available on GitHub, so the GitHub team welcomes pull request. And with the addition of Jetpack, I thought this was an interesting statistic. You mentioned that Automattic now has 106 public repositories on GitHub, and that's a lot of shared code for a company that doesn't really have to share code if they didn't want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Jetpack is the latest addition to those repositories, and what I was blown away by was the contributor guide that they have. If you've ever visited the Jetpack contributor guide, there are just tons of articles in there about how you can write code for WordPress, the best practices, and how to write a bug report that is worth something, how to submit a patch, and it just walks you through all of the steps there. So it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool guide if you want to get involved with Jetpack, or even if you want to model your own open source project after that, as far as presenting a guide that will help people be able to contribute in different ways at different levels.
And that's probably the thing I like most about what they did there was they model for everyone else how to put code on GitHub, right? I've posted a couple repositories on there, and of course our readmes are like, here's the code. Right? That's it. You're like, look, this is for a very technical audience, and they'll figure it out, and if they don't figure it out, then they won't figure it out, and that's that. The team there made it really easy, created some easy on-ramps for people to step in and say, okay, how can I get involved?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And George Stefanis, who was part of the Jetpack team, left a comment on the post that said that the guide to contribution is about to be updated to reflect active development moving to GitHub, and he mentions that it's a tad bit outdated at the moment. So I'm not sure if they're going to take away information related to Subversion or contributing that way, if it's just going to be all related towards GitHub, or what they're going to do in terms of changing the contribution document.
I don't think they want to reveal that yet, because I pressed him for more info, but he didn't say.
No, speaking of contributing to software, I publish my experience of contributing to the core of WordPress. You could find this on wptavern.com a few days ago. And in the midst of that post, in summary, I think it would be awesome to see something like a mentorship program for WordPress. I actually did some research about this, and Drupal has had an entire subsection of their community dedicated to mentoring those who want to contribute to the core but really have no idea how. Jen, I got in touch with Jen Milo, and she says that she's working on a proposal now that may be published by the end of this year, if not early into next year, that will try and get a mentorship program in place to help people along that want to contribute to core but don't necessarily know how to create that track ticket or mess with diff files, or just like someone like me finds track very intimidating because the last thing I want to do as a user is create a bug report and just make developers' lives harder. You know, I don't want to mess up and I don't want to get yelled at, so that's primarily the reason why I stay out of contributing. So I'm hoping that at some point in the future we get to see a WordPress mentorship program. I think there's a lot of people that would benefit from that.
You know what they did at WordCamp San Francisco this last year, which, by the way, they just announced the new dates in October for 2014. But in 2013, in their developer day, they literally had – now, it wasn't all of what you're describing, but they had really easy on-ramps for people in groups to learn how to contribute and how to participate. And the rooms were just – I mean, it was just packed. So I think we're starting to see a bit of that desire to get more and more people engaged, and through documentation, through contributing code. I just think the trend is moving in definitely the right direction.
Yeah, I was actually there at WordCamp San Francisco this year, and that Contributor Day, if anyone – anyone who's interested should see photos that were taken at the Contributor Day. That the room they had set up at the Automatic Office was just filled, and I remember writing about it. It was if you were in that room when everybody was contributing – personally, when the event began, I thought nobody would be able to concentrate. It'd be really loud. Everybody would be talking. But it was completely the opposite. Everybody was heads down, focusing on whatever it was they were participating on, and they were getting work done. And then if somebody ran into an issue, they went over to a different table where that person sort of was responsible for that area of WordPress that could ask them questions to get clarification. And it was just – it was a very surreal experience just standing up and looking at about 200 people all contributing to various aspects of the WordPress project. And the question I have is, other WordCamps have had contributor days like that, but for example, WordCamp Grand Rapids, but I don't think it was nearly as successful as WordCamp San Francisco, where you had most of the core team there. So if other WordCamps have contributor days in the long run, is that beneficial? I mean, do you think there's a way that they could be as beneficial to WordPress as the one at WordCamp San Francisco? Or
I think the issue is mass, right? So if you have, you know, a lot of developer days at WordCamps have anywhere from 4 to, you know, 16 people show up, and then it's difficult because you end up saying, okay, well, in order to make this make sense, we're all going to look at one way to contribute, right? The benefit of having 50, 60, 80, 100, 200 people all show up is you saw in that room, they, you know, people were broken up, right? So people who wanted to work on docs were in one place and BuddyPress in another place and the core in another place. And that really allowed people to kind of find a path for them. So I think some of the WordCamps will have a hard time replicating that kind of thing, but other WordCamps that are really big like Miami, I could totally see something playing out over there.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, having a, if the WordCamp was lucky enough to have maybe someone who's very familiar with the WordPress core and maybe could do a session or just a maybe an area at the happiness bar if they have one to just show people how to contribute to the core of WordPress. Because at that WordCamp San Francisco Contributor Day, I had a gripe and I wanted to voice it out to somebody who works on that part of the project, and I voiced my opinion. They said, you know, you should create a track ticket. I said, what? You know, create what? So they sat me down, worked me through the process, had me type it out, told me write a clear description, and they told me all the steps. And, man, the feeling you get after writing a good track ticket and knowing that it possibly it's going to be added into the core of WordPress, which improves the software for everybody, I mean, that is such an exhilarating feeling.
Of course, you do have to be aware, right, that some people will write one of those and then within minutes get the it's been closed, rejected, we're never going to fix.
Oh, yeah, rejection.
You know, whatever. And that's its own special feeling, but of a different kind, right?
Yeah, I mean, not every patch. I mean, we say that when we talk about contributing to WordPress, we say you should create a great patch. If you want something in WordPress improved, you create the patch, you create the code, and you do all this stuff, you get people involved. But at the end of the day, it doesn't guarantee, even if you have a patch and it's been tested and it works with WordPress, there's no guarantee that it will be committed to WordPress. And
right.
It's interesting how some developers take that kind of rejection. Kind of reminds me of, what was it, Back to the Future? Marty McFly's dad says, I don't think I could take that kind of rejection.
Yeah.
That's
well,
pretty cool.
It's when you spend that level of effort and you think, I figured it out. I got it. This is good. This works. And then you get the, no, we're not doing that. Some days you're like, wow, that's not it. Because some of the statuses are pretty terse. And so it can end up coming across more negative than it actually is. but it can just make you feel like, okay, then what's the point of this, right? So it takes a bit, and there has to be some, what you really want to do is develop some relationship and some trust just so that you can hear the no in the right way, or you can ask the question and get feedback back so that you understand, oh, they're not saying no to what I did, they're saying no because the direction is in a different direction than what they're trying to do, or because they're looking at backward compatibility, which I wasn't thinking about, or XYZ, right? But you know, if all you see is that status change, it can be a little depressing.
Yeah, what a day that would be if you get a ticket that says that you contributed, it says closed, won't fix, and the next day you're mentioning about a feature and they tell you, patch is welcome.
right. And you're like,
about two extremes.
Not so much. You know what I would do if I were feeling blue in that moment is I would go check out an article on 10 great gift ideas for WordPress geeks, because any one of those items would completely cheer me up.
Man, we should hire you. You should be part of the show every week. That's an awesome segue. Yeah, Sarah, you shared 10 great gift ideas for WordPress geeks, and just kind of run through the list real quick.
I did a survey on Twitter and asked people what they wanted for gifts. I got in trouble for saying Christmas. I should say any holiday that celebrates gifts. You can check out this list, and there are a bunch of good ideas. I didn't select them all. I just used what people sent to me and said, hey, I would love to have this for Christmas. So I put those on there, and apparently the WordPress swag store is out of that blue mug. It's been sold out, so a lot of people are bummed about that. But there are plenty of other items on there for the WordPress geek in your life. If you want to make them happy, this is your go-to post.
I was just out in Virginia Beach visiting the guys at Gravity Forms. The company's called Rocket Genius, and I happened to be there. I had the opportunity to be there during their Christmas party, and because of that, I was there when Carl was literally opening up all these boxes. Like every day, he got a new box shipped in of cool stuff with their new logos and everything else. So I flew home with. Or I was actually flying to WordCamp Las Vegas, but I flew home with a new mug with the Gravity Forms logo on it and the rocket on it and a new Pilsner glass with stuff on it. So I feel like Christmas came early. I already got everything I wanted.
This seems to be a popular item, a swag item across various WordPress companies, is the Pilsner glass.
Oh yeah, you should see how many WP Engine glasses. I mean, I'm ready to serve guests.
we should get a shipment of those for the tavern.
they're awesome.
Yeah, among some of the other items on this list is the Jetpack battery pack, which I've seen people use. It's a awesome way to extend the life on devices that need some extra battery life. And then we have a Treehouse membership, and Treehouse is an area that teaches different technologies, form of education. And one of the last things on the list that I thought was interesting, Sarah, is you mentioned the gift of time. So kind of give us a little explanation as to why you added that to the list.
Well, I had a surprising number of people replied to the Twitter survey with, hey, I wish I could have like 2 more hours in the day, or, you know, I wish I could have time to put out this plugin that I'm working on. It was almost half the replies that I got were, I need more time in my life. So I thought, you know, maybe give a little push here for people to give things that they normally wouldn't think about. And you don't have to give it as a gift, but, you know, for friends and family members who are wanting to have more time to contribute to projects or do creative things, you know, you could do something like a household chore or take their car out to, you know, to get maintenance, or offer to keep their kids for an afternoon, anything like that. Probably would make a bigger impact than buying, you know, one of these small gifts.
Last year, around Christmas, maybe a week before Christmas, there were a handful of gals that are friends of my wife, and so I had them all bring all their kids to the house. So, like, 3 different women brought all their children to the house, and then obviously ours, and so my wife and the 3 other gals took off to go shopping and do whatever, and they didn't have to worry about their kids at all. That was maybe the best gift I gave my wife ever, right? Like, it doesn't matter. I buy her jewelry and diamonds and everything else, because at the end of the day, she was like, oh, I could go to the store and I didn't have the kids. And you're like, yeah, well, they were all here. We were playing like crazy, and it was a blast. So sometimes it's just a little babysitting.
How many kids were you there with?
Oh, 7 or 8.
By yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
We should do an interview just on, based on how that experience went.
Yeah, it was a blast. I have no problem having fun.
So, Chris, we want to take an opportunity here to get to know you a little bit. And before getting involved with this thing we call WordPress, you know, what did you do for a living?
Well, I've always had a full-time job, even as I've been involved with WordPress. So I graduated from Berkeley and went to work right up behind the campus at Berkeley Lab, which is a government research lab, and started working literally on internet projects in 1994. So the web was just starting, and you know, it wasn't Yahoo, it was Jerry's Links, and we didn't even have frames yet. We just had blinking text, and it was a lot of fun, and I spent several years there building the first versions of a lot of web-based applications, all hosted software, and all in the midst of a lot of changing dynamics related to web technologies. So that was a lot of fun. I worked with several venture capitalists to do tech transfer, take some of the intellectual property we were designing at the lab and take them out into the world and to help fund startups and all that good stuff. And so eventually I left the lab and joined a startup and began a period of years where I would start a company, grow it up in the first round and maybe with some angel funding or something like that, and then sell the company and start another one, and did that several times, and eventually raised lots of money and worked with venture capitalists again. And then after all that, after five startups, four of which had exits, one of which we closed down, I got married and had a child, and I was literally, my wife did all the work, but we had our child on 2 in the morning, and by 6 in the morning, I was driving to a boardroom to meet with the board of our startup in the Silicon Valley, and you know, I'm like, okay, this really isn't going to work anymore. So my wife made it really clear that it was time to leave the startup world, and so I joined a company called Emphasis Software, where I lead their new product development, their research and design, and help them build new products. So much of the same stuff I've been doing this whole time. So 19 and a half years building new products, and most all of them are software as a service, so they're hosted, they're all web-based technology, and yeah, been around the web for a really long time, having a lot of fun with it, in enterprise space.
How cool is that to be able to say that you were around and you started developing things that were around the birth of the web as we know it? I mean, that's got to be pretty awesome. I mean, you have
I'll tell you what made it so super cool was that when it was so new, nobody else could say they had, 20 years experience. It didn't matter if you were a C++ programmer or an assembly guy or a, machine code guy. It didn't matter where you were in the spectrum. You stepped to the web and it had no state and nothing worked the same way and it was HTML and people said, that's not really coding. And so nobody could look at me and say, you got a degree in social welfare? You're not qualified to do this, because nobody was qualified to do it, right? So today the bar is much higher to get involved in just about anything. I really had it easy. I just stepped right on and said, okay, well, I can learn whatever's coming out next, and it's all been incremental for me compared to people who have to, figure it all out all in one shot.
So this is sort of a deep question, but I mean, considering your experience and when you started, when the web began, what are your thoughts and opinions on the web as to where it was and the web to where it is today?
Well, the first underpinnings, the early days of the web, were really about getting content out there, making content available. The hypertext documents where you could jump from one document to another was like the thing. And yet, literally by 1995 and early 96, I'd built an entire solution, a web-based solution for online education and taking courses, taking quizzes, all that stuff. And at the time, someone looked at me and said, you're trying to build an entire office inside of an elevator. You don't do that, right? You can't build a full application inside a browser. That's just stupid. And yet, if we look now, today, many and most of the applications that we use all the time are all sitting inside a browser. So there's been a massive shift in terms of the goal of what happens inside the browser, what you can do in the browser, and how much you can accomplish. And yet, at the end of the day, I think it's still all about easy access to content, easy access to information, and the easy distribution of that information, right? The fact that, you have a blog and I have a blog and people can actually be self publishers without a whole lot of extra work and extra hoops is still the thing that keeps powering the whole web. So in some ways, we're exactly in the same place we've been over 20 years, and in other ways, we've built far more inside the elevator than anyone ever expected. You know, they thought, oh, we'll just go for a little ride and then we'll be done. That, you know, this is its own place, and there's a lot that's being developed inside it.
Yeah, I like the sort of cycle we've kind of gone through where you used to have, like, mainframes, and then you had dumb terminals, and, you know, the dumb terminals really had nothing on them. You accessed everything from the mainframe, and the mainframe handled all your processing, and then we went through this kind of middle phase where all of the processing and all of the work was done with software, everything on the actual machine itself, the desktop software, and now we've kind of gone back to the mainframe and dumb terminal concept with browsers and everything being in the cloud, and that's where you do all your storage and processing and stuff like that.
And yeah, so absolutely right? We've given people tons, at one point we gave people tons of power, computing power, right on their desktop, and then we essentially moved everything back to the cloud and central servers by using the web. But what's really interesting is that we've actually shifted all that power from what used to be on the desktop 10, 15 years ago. We've actually now shifted it to our palm in the form of a smartphone. I mean, these smartphones have all of the same technological capability and more so than desktop PCs 10 years ago, right? And so you have all this power now where you look at an app like Instagram, right, where you're creating visual filter manipulation of content on the device, not in the cloud, and then sending it up to the cloud, in which case the device is doing the power, the device is doing the work. And now you see people all around walking around carrying these smartphones, right? So in some ways we're living in the best of both worlds. Incredible power, totally mobile, in your hand, and still all the processing and all the archival storage and everything else in the cloud, all while we're moving, right? It means that we don't take breaks nearly enough, we don't sleep nearly enough, but there's a whole lot of fun stuff you can do in the palm of your hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Earlier this year, you wrote a post about blogging on Chris Lema, and I just want to make sure, am I pronouncing your last name right? Because I have a bad habit of saying Lema.
It does not matter. So you can call me Chris Lema, you can call me Chris Lema, it's fine.
Chris Lema, okay, I'll call you Chris, like lemonade. So, but you wrote a post on chrislema.com about blogging and how you've made it a regular practice to do it daily and how it skyrocketed your page views. Now, and during my absence of writing about WordPress, I kept an eye on Twitter just to kind of keep an eye on things. I wasn't writing and publishing things on a daily basis, but I started to see so many people tweeting and retweeting your articles, and I'm thinking, who is this Chris Lema guy? And you went from being on nobody's radar to essentially being on everyone's radar, and I just want to know, how did you do that? How did you go from nobody knowing who Chris was to everybody wants to know who Chris is?
Well, I'm still pretty sure there's a lot of people that don't know who I am, and that's totally fine. But, you know, I will say writing regularly has had a huge effect on that. That's a very slow growth. I mean, it's fast when you look back, right? When you look back, you're like, wow, 18 months and look what's happened. I think I'm about 5,000 or 6,000 page views away from roughly speaking about a million page views over the last 18 months. So the site's been growing consistently, except this month where I started writing about generosity, and all of a sudden people start going, "Hey, stop that! You're supposed to write about WordPress." but over the 18 months, and especially over the last 12 months or 13, I've been writing regularly, and so that definitely has an impact. It's slow growth, but consistent growth, and so that over time it accumulates, right? And so there's that. I also about 3 years ago started speaking at official events, some meetups, and then some very local WordPress events, WordCamps. So Jeffrey Zinn of Pixel Jar in Orange County gave me a shot at speaking at WordCamp Orange County when he didn't know who I was. And that gave me the opportunity over 2 years to speak at two or three, and then this year I've spoken at 11, plus Pressnomics. So the public speaking definitely helps because you get to address 200 to 400 people all in one shot, and then the writing you get to address in a more specific way, specific folks over time. And I think both those things have had an impact. The other thing is, of course, for the most part, I just try and write content that will be helpful to people without asking for a lot back. And I think we're filled these days with bombardment of, you get this if you sign up for my monthly this, or you know, I'll give you this if you join my program for this. And there's always a transactional nature to it. And by not having a transactional nature to it, I think that's allowed it to proliferate a lot better than had I kind of locked it down behind a paywall or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible to see the type of growth you've been able to muster just by writing daily. And then, you know, as you said, you went out and projected yourself at these various work camps. And I think Sarah, on with relation to communities and that, has a question that she'd like to ask you.
How is the WordPress community different from other business communities that you've been involved with in the past? So I've seen you've done a lot with all kinds of different businesses and been a part of, you know, the startup communities and a lot of different sort of things. How would you compare WordPress to the communities that you've been working with in the past?
That's a great question. I'll give you two answers. One that's really, really positive and one that's a place where we can still grow. So the thing I love most about the WordPress community is, like every community, and especially like every technical community, there are rock stars, right? There are people who are incredibly talented and well-respected and know their stuff inside and out, right? So, you know, I could literally spend the next 20 minutes listing them all out, but you know, whether you're talking about Nason or whether you're talking about Jaquith or whether you're talking about Dre Armada or where, you know, Brad, you know, Lisa Sabin-Wilson, you just go on and on with the list. The difference between the WordPress community and other technical communities I've been a part of is not that we have rock stars, but the difference is that these rock stars are completely available, that they are approachable, that you can find yourself sitting next to one of them at a WordCamp for lunch and actually engage and talk, and they're not saying, well, excuse me, you need to go to that table over there. This is the special table. And I've been in tons of communities, technical communities, over the last 20 years where that happens, right? Like, you're walking towards a table, and you're like, oh, I want to go see that guy over there. And there's a group of people that are between you and them, and their job is to keep you between you and them. And you're like, this is not so fun. Or they disappear, right? They show up to speak. They get on stage, they speak, and then they're gone, and you never see them again, right? And the WordPress community is totally different. So part of, you know, part of my ability to participate in the community is because people like this, you know, I've mentioned before, right? Dre Armada from Security is down in this area. I moved down to San Diego area, and you know, he was more than generous in inviting me to a couple different events to, you know, sit next to me, to introduce me to some of his friends, and you know, that just has a huge impact of being able to sit and hang out with some people and have conversations and all that good stuff. So that's probably one of the most significant distinguishing features of this community that doesn't exist in a lot of other technical communities. On the other side, right, where we can continue to grow, there's no other community where the capitalization of a letter is something that is given that much energy around. like, you can write .net with a period, or you can write just net, or you can write C# instead of .net, and someone won't correct you and say, well, C# is the language, .net are the libraries and the architecture. Nobody gets into those debates, right? Because seriously, we all have work to do. And yet there's, like, every month there's drama press somewhere on Twitter, and you're like, seriously, I don't know of a lot of 12-year-olds who are writing on Twitter, so these are adults, and yet we're debating something, or we're interacting in a way that really isn't at the bar or the level of the rest of the community we've already developed, right? And so there's still room for us to grow, to give grace and mercy to people, because every one of us at one point was stepping in and didn't know. And I remember writing the lowercase p, right? And then someone wrote me back and said, like, duh, you know, what's wrong with this? And I looked at it for like 10 minutes, like, I seriously don't know what's wrong with it. Like, how am I supposed to, like, literally, I'm looking at the word and I spelled it right, and then I had to go looking around to figure out, oh, it's the capital P, right? So, and that's just one silly example of ways that we get bogged down in silliness that it's dramatic for the sake of drama, and there's, it so completely betrays everything else that we're doing in the community, right? To, you know, I spend my days in my spare time as I write and as I interact with the community, I spend it trying to build businesses up, and I want them to grow and succeed. And so those skirmishes and debates online, they're online in public, right? I mean, that's the other thing, right? You could easily send someone a DM, or you could write them a private email to have a dialogue. And we do so much in public, and we do so much too quickly, that there's definitely still room there for that to grow.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree. And I think a lot of times, you know, the workflow of WordPress projects is in public, so everyone can contribute. But then some of the conversations that really ought to be private, people just, they don't email anymore. They don't send those DMs, like you said, and then it does get to blow up to be drama. But I think a lot of times with the capital P thing and other little things like that, I think that comes out of people's insecurity, and they want to feel like they belong or they know something, and so they correct other people on Twitter or wherever to make themselves feel like, hey, I belong. I know how this is supposed to work. But, you know, it just gets old and sad after a while. It makes me wish there were no capitals at all and it was just lowercase WordPress.
Yeah.
Well, do you know who's responsible for a lot of this? Is Matt Mullewegg. He was behind adding a capital P dang it filter to WordPress because he had a pet peeve of seeing so many people improperly capitalizing the P. I mean, I think a lot of the attitude towards capitalizing the P kind of stems from that.
I don't mind that there's a capital P. I'm on the board of directors of a company called Velo Media, and sometimes people call it Velo, right? And I'm like, there's the second half of that name, right? So it's your name. It's important, you know, learn it and say it right. And I get that. I don't have a debate on that. I just think there are a lot of ways to educate that don't include kind of public shaming, right? So the very thing that I love most about the community is that you can easily approach someone even if you don't know much, right? But that gets betrayed online when we make it look like you can't easily approach the community or you can't easily approach the technology because we're picky over the little things, right? And so it's just worth learning how to have grace. And I think one of the benefits of being really old among a lot of young people is I get the opportunity to have that grace and mercy on people, you know, with people often. Right, because I'm like, look, when you get to, you know, be a bit older and have done this longer, you know how much you don't know, and there's still tons that I don't know and understand, and I'll never approach this community from a perspective of like, well, I got it figured out, now you need to listen to me, because one conversation with Andrew Norcross, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm an idiot and he's brilliant, and I got to go figure out more stuff, and that's beautiful. That ought to encourage all of us to learn and grow. But we also need to be on the flip side of that, be really aware of the grace that's needed when other people are first learning, right?
Go ahead with your other question.
Okay. Are you into coding at all, or is that like any part of your hobby? I know that you write mostly about business. Is that something that you're interested in?
Yeah, so I write about business mostly because it's where I have the most experience that is most applicable to a group that most other people aren't writing about. So now there's over the last couple of years, I've seen more people step into the space and write about business, and I think that's fantastic. I love that. But when I was first starting out, I just realized, you know, there's a lot of people writing about code. I won't really distinguish or take a corner in that space, on top of which I'm not a fantastic developer. But I think there's other places where I have expertise and can add value where parts of those dialogues weren't happening. And so I stepped into the business side of things on purpose, right, strategically, to say there's an easier way to distinguish myself and to add value that way. I still, every now and then, hack some code. I manage in my day job a bunch of engineers that work on many different kinds of code. So I have oversight over green screen code and system builder and stuff like AccuCobol and Delphi and FoxPro and C Sharp and some PHP. So I still have to spend my days in code. And at the same time, most of these days, I have staff who are far better at writing code than I am. I tell people I'm not really good with semicolons. More often than not, I will write some of the code and then see it not compile and then figure out that I left something off. And that's frustrating. Mm-hmm. But I've collaborated with a couple folks to build some little things here and there. I also spend some time designing, especially when you're in product and you do a lot of new product development, a lot of it is in user interface design and user interaction and that work, and so I spend some time doing that. So I don't contribute a ton of code to the WordPress community, And I'm just thankful to know a lot of fantastically smart people who do.
Right. Cool.
Yes. Speaking of writing about business, you write about pricing a lot. And we know it's a subjective topic and that one price fits all. But why is pricing so hard? And you seem to come up with a different angle on it every week.
So I actually don't write about pricing every week, but I do. So one of the things you notice is I write about the things that I think or see other people aren't writing a lot about because, A, I think it's helpful, right, to get some information in there that people aren't talking through, and B, because it does help me distinguish, right? It helps me, find micro segments and step into corners that other people haven't taken and distinguish myself, right? So at one point, there weren't a lot of people writing about membership plugins or e-commerce, and now we have a lot of people writing about those, and so I can kind of slide over into some other space. I don't feel the need to hog those corners. There are lots of other really talented people coming alongside and doing great things, but there's not a lot of dialogue around pricing. Pricing seems to be magical and mysterious. Most of the people I talk to feel like they're doing it wrong. Rarely do you hear anyone saying, I've got this totally nailed, and I've had the opportunity to have read just about, probably 30 or 40 books on pricing, and I've been involved in pricing of over 90 different hosted products over the course of the last 20 years with all sorts of experience, tons of failure, and so I write about it, right? And because I end up reading some content that ends up not being super exciting to other people, journals and patents and other crazy things, I can find some of these angles and say, okay, these are really interesting angles. Now let's turn it into a story that I can tell so that I can take some of this content and make it really useful to someone else who doesn't have to go read the journal. I guess maybe the theme of what I'm trying to do is make a lot of this content that is more technical, even though it's not coding technical, make it more easier to consume, more consumable for everyday folks. And pricing is one of those areas where people are like, I can write the code, I can design the code, I can build the product, I can even design the interface. I don't have a clue what's going to happen when I price it. And I don't have a clue how to manage the sales of it. And so it's one of the areas I come alongside to try and help folks out on.
Yeah, I think you've helped out a lot of people based on the comments of your post. And, you know, at the very least, it gives business owners, commercial themes, service developers, plugins. It gives everybody at least some food for thought to think about because, you know, there's a lot of business owners who think, I think it's worth, $20, per download. But really, it's just based on what they're feeling instead of all the actual research that should go into it.
Yeah, the most commonly used pricing strategy is what I call a Me Too strategy, right? So they look left, they look right, they say, this is what they're all doing. It's called comparative pricing, and so they basically price whatever someone else is doing. It presumes on a dynamic that doesn't exist, but it presumes on the reality that other people have done real work, right? But the problem is, if the other people did the exact same thing, what you end up with is everybody rushing to the same price, right? So everyone ends up saying all plugins are worth $29, when we know that's not true. There are a lot of plugins that are worth far more than that. And some of them are worth more because it took a lot more to code. Others of them are just worth more because they deliver more value. And if they deliver more value, it makes sense to charge more. When you go to buy a car, you don't go on a car lot and say, I would like to know how much it costs to build that car and how much it costs to build that car. Pricing isn't just about the cost model. And unfortunately, whether you're in product pricing or especially if you're in service pricing, I hear a lot of people talking about pricing as, let me just figure out my cost model. And if all you're doing is figuring out your cost model, you're protecting yourself from losing money, but you're not really making money. And there's no good way to sustain that business, right? And obviously, in investing in this community, one of the goals I have is to help it last another 10 years. And I think the core of that requires our ability to build sustainable businesses that will last, and to help us understand what it looks like to step into the enterprise space as WordPress becomes more popular. So I write about some of the things that help us think through those things.
Yeah, and speaking of enterprise in relation to software, when I hear that word, I think of three things: big, slow, expensive. Now, when we talk about WordPress in the enterprise environment, what does that really mean? Does that mean that what is the enterprise environment that WordPress is a part of? Can it work?
I think so. I mean, it is big, and in many cases, it is slow. slow in different cases. It's slow sometimes to get paid. It's slow sometimes to get decisions made. But what's never slow is from the time the decision gets made to the time that it's due, it's always fast, right? So you could spend 6 months debating whether or not you should do something. And you can be aware of it, right? And then all of a sudden they come back to you and they say, okay, we're going to pull the trigger on this. And then they'll look at you, and we're in the middle of December, and they'll say, so can we have it by March? You're like, how come everything else gets to be? And then, of course, you finish in March, and then it'll take you another 8 months to get paid. So every other part of the process, every other part of the process is slow except the construction part. Then they're like, can you do it quick? Come on, it's just a couple things. The reality is that I think more and more people are seeing WordPress step into the enterprise. There's, because of that slow factor with IT, you'll find that organizations, marketing organizations, are using WordPress as a way to not have to use IT, and in some cases, they're not even hosting it with their own IT. They're hosting it externally so that they can just get their stuff done, right? They want to roll out a campaign. They don't want to wait 3 months for IT to approve the you know, development of a new site. So WordPress is already stepping into the enterprise. I think now it's just how do we help the community embrace the fact that it's moving up market, because you can't do the same thing, right? Like, we were joking about Twitter and capital P. You can get away with being 26 and telling some other 26-year-old you're doing it wrong. You can get away with that, and it's almost cute, right? You can get away with looking at the way someone spells WordPress and send them some cute little code in Twitter that says, you know, call this function, and it's the capital P dang it function, right? I mean, you can get away with that at that level. It's a lot harder to get away with that petty, childish behavior in an enterprise that is planning on spending $600,000 on a project. And if their engineers, who may be .NET engineers, ask you for an API to a plugin so that they can write some code to inject data straight into posts automatically through an API, and you look at them and you go, that's not the way this works. You need to understand our community. That's not going to play well. Right? That's not what they care about. They're not looking necessarily to get involved in the community. They're looking to produce code. And so I think part of us growing up is figuring out how to interact positively and well in that enterprise community.
Yeah, I mean, WordPress powers 20% of the web, and there's so many different use cases that WordPress covers nowadays. I mean, everyone from the just blogger who wants to write opinions and whatever comes to their mind to e-commerce to some of the biggest sites on the web. And it's just one piece of software, but, I mean, it's an incredible feat for it to work on so many different sites, so many different use cases that it just seems like enterprise is an entirely different world compared to the people who, you know, run their own blogs and everything else. It's just kind of hard to contemplate WordPress working in the enterprise environment.
It is and it isn't, right? So, you know, at Emphasis at one point, we wanted to spin up microsites for every one of our software products. And we had, I don't know, probably, we spun up in the course of a month, we spun up, I think, something like 13 websites, right? And this was several years ago, but the fact that we could, right? The fact that you could sit down and say, okay, I want one theme. I want to tweak that theme. I want that theme to be just ours. But at the same time, I want to make each product be a version of the theme but have a different color palette to it. And I want to drop this all in. I want to add some photos. I want to put links between them. And I want to get this all launched, and I want to do it in a month. Normally in the enterprise, that's not how that works. And, you know, WordPress made all that very, very possible. And I think those kinds of things are being seen. Plus, you get into all these other additional ways you might use WordPress, right? We just worked on a site for Lexus where they, you know, a specific customer of Lexus that's in a specific program will submit their VIN, and a Gravity form will parse the VIN, determine whether or not they're in the program and that it's right, and then they'll be able to give them a refund. It's a small microsite. It does one thing only: determine whether you're valid and send you back a check. But it's not a lot of engineering, right? Because you can end up building the site in WordPress, adding Gravity Forms, writing a few lines of custom code, and be done, right? And that's really the power of WordPress, right? It's flexibility to do so many things, not just one thing that you hope everybody has to get done. You can just keep imagining different ways to leverage it.
Right. I got two more questions for you, and then we'll let you go. And the first is, you know, back in September, You suggested that WordCamps ought to have speakers or speaker reviews to protect the audience from those who want to talk more about themselves versus the subject at hand. You know, and you even went as so far as to suggest maybe a national blacklist. Do you still feel that way about WordCamps?
No, what I said was that I had thought of the idea of a national blacklist and talked to Andrea Milton, who had highlighted all the 20 different ways that was a stupid idea, at which point I went, oh, you're right. Which, by the way, we had that in private, right? So, I referenced it in public, but she didn't berate me in public, which I loved, right? She just highlighted, look, here's some other things you haven't thought about. And I'm like, oh, you're right. The reason I thought about it, though, the whole reason it came up, right, is because we were at a WordCamp where someone spent, you know, two-thirds of the presentation talking about themselves. And you're like, this is insane, right? And, of course, organizers don't want to look odd running up in the middle of the stage and pulling them down, right? That just comes across really strange. And it's hard to figure out how do you qualify people before they go up. I've shifted the way I do my talks these days where I may not even introduce myself, right? I'll start right in the story. I'll do the presentation, and I'll end and say thank you and get off the stage, hoping that it was the content that delivered value, inspiration, encouragement, what have you, and not about who I am, right? And maybe it's partly the kind of talks I'm doing, but I definitely don't spend even the first 5 minutes talking about who I am and my qualifications for what I want to share. And yet, when you see the exact opposite of that, where someone's talking for 30 minutes about themselves, you're like, oh my God, I'm gonna shoot myself. So I don't know that there's a perfect answer. I just know that it's still something we have to work through and figure out, because this community is still growing. And, you know, it continues to grow so rapidly. You have a bunch of people who are already very comfortable with WordPress that they go to a WordCamp, they're still sitting in the hall, right? It's the people who are new to WordPress, they show up and sit down, and they just assume, as in many conferences, that the person on stage is the one who's saying it right. And sometimes the one on stage isn't saying it right. And so, again, you don't want to be you want to be respectful, you want to give grace and mercy, but at the same time, you need some way to say, okay, we need to make sure that doesn't happen again. So
yeah, and I mentioned your post, and I think at the end of the day, this all comes back on the shoulders of the WordCamp organizer. They are the one who should do a one-on-one, do all the background checks on anyone that's going to speak at their event, and make sure they tell them, hey, you know, we have a set of guidelines, a set of rules. If it's going to be a me type of thing, you know, you can go on elsewhere. This is about sharing your information to the community, and, you know, it all comes back on them.
Yeah, and I think the hard part is everything comes back on them, so they're doing a lot, right, which is a lot of work. And the other thing is there are some people who will realize they're doing me, and so they'll self-select out, but there are other people who just don't know it, right? They just don't know what they're doing, and that's when, you know, you want to circle back and have a one-on-one and say, look, I want to highlight to you what happened here, and I want to suggest, right, go back and look at the tape. I think you spent a lot of time on you, and I know there were a couple little tidbits of useful information in there, but how can you think about this in a different way so that you can share those, you know, really good piece of information without turning it into follow me, sign up for me, join my thing, I'll give you this free, and it's all about me.
And I think something we'll see in the future is it becoming standard is after a WordCamp, all attendees get a survey filled with questions where they actually get to provide feedback on the speakers, and that will give the organizers more leverage and direction in terms of who to have back next year or if they need to have a one-on-one conversation with somebody.
Yeah, for sure. And I just think, you know, I know I've traveled a lot this year to a lot of WordCamps that are outside of my local region. You know, I think at the core of it, it also makes sense to try and keep that notion of local speakers. And so the more people you know, because you've seen them at meetups and interacted and all this other stuff, the easier it is for those organizers to do that. So even this next year, I'll probably cut down the number of WordCamps I travel to by half, just so that you help those WordCamps have more local talent present.
The last question we have for you today is a listener question, and they want to know your thoughts on what do you think are the strengths and limitations of the WordPress platform?
That's a great question. So WordPress does something very, very well, right? It takes data in, stores it, and represents it back out. Without being pejorative at all, I call those file cabinet applications, right? So you want to put something in, you want to save it, you want to know where it is, you want to be able to find it, you want to be able to get it out. And I think WordPress does that very, very well. And whether you want your files to be in, you know, beige manila folders, or you want them to be in purple folders or green folders, is immaterial, right? You can use custom post types to manipulate the structure and look and feel of the data you're storing, but it will do a great job at storing it and then representing it. I think there are other places where you're trying to do other things, and I'm a big fan of using WordPress as an application framework, and I've done it for now 3 years, but I'll tell you, the apps that I build on top of WordPress are all file cabinet apps, right? They're apps where I collect data, I store it, I want to go back and retrieve it, pull it back and show it to you. And there's a lot of apps like that, right? You look at all the CRM apps where, you know, you're collecting data about a customer, you're collecting them about a set of interactions, and then later you want to look up that customer and see their interactions. That's fantastic. I think WordPress does a really great job for a lot of that. I think there are other kinds of applications where WordPress doesn't deliver the same ease of use for a developer and maybe for a customer, right? So I build a lot of software that is has to be compliant, regulatory compliance for different government agencies, and including the IRS. We do a lot of rule engines. We have to, move money through several steps, and in each step we have to round out to different numbers. All that kind of calculation and work and the rules, forward chaining and backward chaining, artificial intelligence, those kinds of things are not super, super easy, or at least not sped up by using WordPress. And so I think depending on the application you're building, you may want to look at another framework and build it somewhere else. So I'm not a fan of saying use WordPress for everything. I am a fan of saying there's a lot that WordPress can do and makes it really awesome and easy. But there are other places where you just say, okay, the kind of computational algorithms, the performance I'm looking for, the speed and pace at which I need something to happen. We built a real estate solution on top of WordPress, and yet had to build some custom tables and some custom indexing and some custom algorithms around search, because the search component of WordPress and storing a bunch of data in PostMeta wasn't going to be a high-performing solution. And so that was right on the edge where you're like, okay, I still get a ton out of using WordPress, but this one little place I'm going to have to step outside. But I know other places where we just say, forget it, we'll just code it in something else and move on. So I think you just have to know where it works well and where it doesn't.
Yeah, this time next year and in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see a lot more of WordPress being used as an application framework, especially if it'd be nice to see the fruits of people's labors from the AppPressor app that recently came out that should make developing apps, native apps for Android and iOS built on WordPress a lot easier. You've been writing about generosity in between gift giving, which awesome gift you gave the Sean Hesketh, by the way. That's really cool, of WP 101. And, you know, between the gift giving and the sharing of your knowledge to the world through your blog, I just wanted to know, can I have your permission to call you the Kris Kringle of WordPress?
No.
Okay. All right. I figured I'd ask.
I seriously don't think that's going to stop you, though, right? So that's I say no simply because I know you still can. But that's crazy, right? You do understand, right?
Yes, I understand. But I just want to let everyone know that I've had the opportunity to meet you for the first time at WordCamp San Francisco. And, at that time, the only thing I knew about you is all of the interactions people had with you on Twitter and your blog posts and your comments. And I had a chance to talk to you for about 20 or 30 minutes, and then after I got done talking with you, I just sat there. My mind was blown. I mean, you're incredibly humble. You're a great person to talk to. You're filled with knowledge, and I think you're an excellent resource, an excellent steward of the WordPress community. And well, I mean that. I'm not just global.
Thank you. I will say this, right, to anyone listening. Humility is a choice, right? It's you're not born with humility. It's simply a choice to believe and to recognize all the things you don't know, and to help that kind of cement your feet on the ground rather than focusing at your navel and all the things you do know. And so, you know, I think as a community, we're all much better off with a realistic perspective of what we do know and what we don't know. And I just think it happens that as you get older, you realize how much more you don't know. I love being generous with folks, and I do that through writing, I do that through gift giving, but I do not have the intention of giving gifts to every single person. And so hence, Kris Kringle is a really bad moniker, because from a brand perspective, it's setting the bar way too high. Last year I gave gifts, WordPress gifts, to about 40 or 50 people who had been involved in the community and contributed, and I want to say thank you. This year I shrunk it down to, you know, 5 to 10, and really tried to create some very focused gifts that were unique. Simply to say to the people I'm investing a lot in, to say, hey, I really enjoyed the year and I look forward to another year. But I keep going more narrow rather than broader, because I think it has more impact, right? So a $10 gift to 50 people is not the same as, you know, a larger gift to a lot less people. And I encourage anyone listening to choose the people they strategically want to invest in, and be generous with them, right? And then obviously everybody has a blog, or everybody can have a blog. Be generous with your knowledge, because at the end of the day, you have it. There's tons of things you know, and you may think that someone else is going to call you out. You may think that someone else is going to tell you you spelled it wrong. You may think that, you know, at some level that, you know, 6 months from now you're going to look back and think it was incorrect, or that there was a better way to do it. It doesn't matter. For now, publish, right? And produce and be generous with your knowledge, because there's someone behind you who doesn't know it and who could benefit from it.
Well, if I ever have kids, don't be surprised if at this time of year you receive letters in the mail. That's all I'm going to say. Sarah, do you have anything else you'd like to tell Kris before we let him out of here?
No, just thanks for joining us, and well, we loved having you on the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, you're awesome person to talk to. In fact, Nick V in the chat room says Kris Lema is an awesome person to talk to. So there's at least one person out there who agrees with me. But Kris, you are out and about and everywhere. Where can we keep tabs on you?
Well, the easiest place is at krislema.com. That's where I spend my days writing. I'm on Twitter at Kris Lema, and I'm on Monday mornings, right at 11. I'm on another podcast called the WP Water Cooler. And we are, I don't think we're going to hit 5 million by the end of the year. I think it's going to cross into next year. But we are rushing towards 5 million views. So we're excited to have people come check it out. It's mostly entertainment with a tiny bit of education.
And as it turns out, many people out there are enjoying your show. I mean, it's incredible. Almost 500. You say almost 500 million views?
No, 5 million. Okay,
5 million. Not quite 500.
No.
But you're on your way.
No, that's I was super excited one day. I was talking to my friend Syed Balki, who does List 25 and does WP Beginner, and I was super excited, right? Because I think we were about to hit 2 million views, and we had 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel, and I was so excited. We hit 1,000, and he's like, "That's awesome." I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Yeah, we've been doing pretty well at List 25." Like, great. He's like, "Oh yeah, we finally crossed 100,000 or whatever, right?" I mean, it was just, and that's how you stay humble, right? Because you're like, oh, whatever it is I've gotten to, wherever it is I've landed, there's somebody else who's like, oh, I'm 100 times better than that. And you just go, yeah. Of course, I go to that site. I love List 25, but every time I go, I see things that I shouldn't see that make no sense to me. And Syed keeps telling me, "This site is not for you. Leave." And I'm like, okay, thank you. So,
well, Kris, very thankful for having you stop by on the show and sharing some of your knowledge. I mean, I didn't know you went back all the way back to the birth of the web. I mean, that's awesome. And love what you're doing in the WordPress community, and I wish you all the best, and hope to reminisce with you at the next WordCamp we meet together at.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, you take care, guys.
Thanks a lot. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. We will not be doing a live show next Friday due to the holiday season, and we're going to come back on January 3rd. That's going to be the first episode of 2014. Looking forward to that, and that's when we'll return back to doing WordPress Weekly. So you can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on wptaver.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's J-E-F-F-R-0, and you can also follow Sarah on Twitter at
Polly Plummer, P-O-L-L-Y-P-L-U-M-M-E-R.
And until 2 weeks from now on January 3rd, I want to wish everybody happy holidays, and we'll talk to you soon.